You remember adolescence, right? Probably pretty awkward. For a lot of us, it was. Our bodies, our minds, everything was changing. And while it has some serious ups and downs, we all know it's a normal life transition. So how about the normal transition to motherhood? We hear a lot about postpartum depression, but what about the other real changes a woman experiences that don't quite fit into that category? According to one doctor, the other changes are not top of mind for much of the medical community. She wants to give those changes a name.
Matrescence. Matrescence sounds just like adolescence, and it's the analogy is really helpful. I borrowed it from anthropology because I became really interested in why didn't we have a term to describe the developmental moment for transitioning into motherhood?
That's reproductive psychiatrist Dr. Alexandra Sachs. She says having vocabulary for this transition can have positive, real-world consequences.
How come we only have words for things like postpartum depression? What about the normal transition? Just like teenagers who go through adolescence, women go through matrescence. And I believe that if we can educate women more about what are the pillars of matrescence and get women talking to each other more, we could maybe even change the way postpartum depression is experienced and talked about in our culture.
We've been bringing you conversations about the healthcare challenges unique to women. And last week, many of you called to tell us that we need better overall postpartum care in America. Dr. Sachs says yes, and understanding this transitional period is one step.
You know, what I've really learned is that it's not just psychiatric. Women don't return for a health visit with their OBGYN until 6 weeks.
6 weeks later.
6 weeks later, right. So when we say, is the postpartum under examined, I would say yes, and that's physical and emotional. In countries like England, the government pays for a nurse to come visit a woman immediately after the postpartum, certainly within that six-week window, because we know that's the most common time for things to come up in terms of complications, physical and emotional, that are the result of the labor and delivery experience and the enormous physiological and anatomical change that happens during pregnancy.
So often when we think about these changes, we only talk about postpartum depression. But if you could expand my horizons a little bit more and explain to me about some of the other changes that take place during this period.
The body is going through an amazing shift, and there are all these interesting consequences. There hasn't, unfortunately, been enough research, and that's part of what I'm trying to sort of call out. But in the 2017 Nature Neuroscience, there was a wonderful article that was published based on research that was done by scientists in Spain and the Netherlands, where they showed that there are brain changes that we can see in women up to 2 years after delivering a baby. The interpersonal regions actually changed. So those might be regions actually that code for the ability to empathize, to maybe recognize your baby's cry or zoom into their facial cues. So these are interesting questions. How have women even been evolutionarily impacted in terms of brain changes for what to zero in terms of the experience of caretaking and zooming in on those interpersonal strengths? And, you know, it's really fascinating. The human baby is really the most vulnerable in all of the animal kingdom, potentially. We know that to be as independent as a baby chimpanzee, a human baby would have to be 18 months old. So women would have to be pregnant for 18 months to be on par with what chimpanzees have in terms of their mother child care. So it's a really phenomenal relationship between the mother and the baby in terms of this tremendous dependency in the first year of life.
If there are 2 or 3 points that you want women to know about matrescence, what would those be?
So one of them is that I would say you're going to be experiencing the emotion of ambivalence.
Ambivalence?
Yes. And ambivalence does not mean that you're ambivalent about how much you love your baby, but you're going to feel ambivalent about the push and pull required for having to take care of your baby constantly and how to navigate figuring out how to take care of yourself. You're going to feel guilty when you have moments where you need to let your baby cry for a minute so that you can actually go to the bathroom or so that you can pick up the telephone. We are humans. We're not robots, and we can't cut off our needs. But when we're put in the position position of having to care for this vulnerable creature, it's a feeling of ambivalence that we have when we have to pull away from them to care for ourselves. But it's really that push and pull of leaning in, loving our children, and then stepping back and saying, okay, who am I? What do I need to do for my emotional wellness, my intellectual wellness, my relationships with my friends and partner, my professional identity and goals? How do I lean in and lean out to care for my child and myself in this dance?
So what would it take to change the silence around some of these issues?
I think there's so much stigma and shame around the ups and downs that happen for women, that women aren't speaking as openly as they could, which would, I think, really prevent a lot of the isolation and shame that may fuel rates of depression. I hear from women in my office that they come in and they say, I'm the only one in my group of friends who's had a miscarriage. I'm the only one who has not been able to breastfeed. And statistically, that is just simply not accurate. The rates of those experiences are so much higher than I think many women admit to each other socially. But I think we really have polarized the concepts of a perfect mother and bad mother. And so I think women often don't talk about their matrescence stories because really the experience of motherhood is a lot of ups and downs. There's so many things that are normal, transitional, that sort of get easier after the first year that we really need to educate people about so they can speak more openly and feel more reassured.
So I think some people might hear this and say, okay, all this is well and good to talk about these issues more, but how do we get more funding for actual programs to help women? Is there a way to get insurance providers, hospitals, medical professionals to take notice of this and relieve some of the financial burden of this period in a woman's transition to motherhood?
In general, we need to have more funding for preventative care. And we also need to give doctors more reimbursement for spending time talking to their patients. You know, dosing a medication or doing a procedure can be coded differently and often more highly reimbursed than the time spent talking with our patients. So we really need to shift that model and encourage insurance companies to reimburse doctors for more time spent educating patients about preventative approaches. I also think we need to talk to doctors more about remembering to pay attention to the woman, even in pediatric encounters when we're there to talk about the child, to ask mom, how are you doing? But there still isn't enough service for treatment. We need to have more access to care for psychotherapy and for mental health treatment options that, you know, really need to be viewed as important and as impactful for health as physical conditions.
Dr. Alexandra Sachs, reproductive psychiatrist, New York Times contributor, co-author of the forthcoming book, How Come No One Told Me, The Emotional Guide to Pregnancy and the First Year of Motherhood. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we've been hearing your thoughts about that time in your life.
Hi, my name is Gail Beam. I'm calling from Milton, West Virginia, and my oldest child is 23. You know, my husband and I grappled with these same issues that the psychiatrist was just talking about in terms of in what way do these problems get aired? You know, when the woman goes to her six-week checkup, it's the day she got a shower and looks good. And there's really no forum to have psych issues addressed. And we've grappled with that 23 years ago, and it sounds like people are still grappling with it today.
Hi, this is Emily from St. Louis, Missouri. I loved the story. It was very interesting to me, and I wish someone would have told me that because I had a C-section, it took a few extra weeks to really bond with my child just because my body didn't go into natural labor. I didn't release the same hormones, and I wasn't told that until months later, and it made sense after someone talked to me about it.
It's so great to have a name to this phenomenon that women go through. I have three children, and I now consider myself a pro, but everything I went through on my first child, I had no idea. It would be great to have more conversation about it, especially in the workplace, that allowed us to just be more comfortable with what we go through.
Hi, this is Anna from Seattle. My matrescence was incredibly difficult. I had ambivalence, I had guilt, I had extreme anxiety. I had a lot of health issues after giving birth, and I was really limited in what I was able to do physically. I fell into a pretty dark postpartum anxiety and depression. It didn't hit me in the way that I expected it to. It presented itself as anxiety. The way that I look back at my matrescence, I really love that term, is similar to the way I look back at adolescence, actually. It felt like going through a fire.
Hi, I'm Natalie from Seattle, Washington, and I just listened to the take on matrescence, which I think is a really interesting term that I'm just hearing for the first time, and I think a lot of people are. I'm actually a postpartum doula, so I work with a lot of families after they've had a baby, and I totally agree with her. I think that there should be a lot more concentration on the mother after she has a baby, and a lot of the time there is a lot of medication that's being handed out or things that there's not a lot of listening that's going on. And a lot of the time my job is just to listen. I had really bad postpartum depression, and I might not have gone down that road if someone would have just taken the time to listen to me.
Hi, this is Catalina Lefevre. I'm calling from Richardson, Texas. I had an atypical postpartum experience. I had tons of support around me, a wonderful husband who was there, had time off for about 3 months. But with all that support and all that help, I still felt lost. The nights of not sleeping caught up with me, and after about 6 weeks, I could not sleep. And eventually I did contact my OB-GYN and told him that I thought I did have postpartum depression, and he worked with me to find a medication that would work, and I started to sleep again. It was a very difficult emotional time for me. I felt like I was failing in so many ways. I was failing my baby, I was failing myself, I was failing my husband, but I was able to get through it and have another baby a few years later. But it is an incredibly difficult time for women, and we need to talk about it. We need to share what's going on and not live in the shadows. So many of us go through this. It isn't easy, and we need to be there for each other.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.